This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. It's Chris Plunkett. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. You're tuned into AM 970, The Apple, the talk of New York. What we do on this show is we talk about disasters and emergencies and property damage and we've really encompasses a lot of different types of disasters. Over the past months, I've been given tips on to try to avoid having a disaster in your home or your business with numerous experts in different disciplines of the disaster world. Also have brought in other guests regarding international incidences with the Haiti, for instance, one thing, and some medical issues with diabetes and cardiovascular situations that are experienced that we're having in this country. I will be reporting on that in the next couple of weeks, a follow-up with Dr. Archie Roberts. It's the first full week after Thanksgiving, so hopefully everybody shook off the turkey and got back knee-deep into the work mode. Next couple of weeks, everybody remembers Little Paul and Big Paul. We'll be Skyping with them. I don't know if you guys know about Skyping. It's a video feed, and they're going to be giving me some live updates on what's happening down there in Haiti. I'm still very much in touch with those guys as an American, and them being such a close neighbor. And, you know, like I said, I've been saying all along, you know, we're all into this party together. You just can't let another country die on the vine. You know, education is the key there. It's also key in our country, too. And that's why we kind of jumped into the diabetes, why we're not educating our children and different areas of the society that need to be educated about this growing disease in this country that is going to result in a major disaster. I think my brother was telling me about the phrase, you know, the Venetians, they you know, was a thriving empire, and they died from within and take care of their labor force and things like that. This past week, we experienced some crazy weather throughout the East Coast, all the way down to Alabama and Tennessee. There were tornadoes down there. A lot of families got their lives disrupted severely. Thank God there was no deaths that I know of. There could well be. The search is still on, unfortunately. I've never actually done tornado work before, whether it was for the insurance companies or being called in by FEMA or anything like that. If you can go to my comments pages, is there a protocol when, you know, the sirens go off? Again, I don't know, so I'm not talking from experience. I'm talking about, you know, I like to be educated about it. What happens, you know, when you get notification? Is it you drive to a spot, or is there a place on your own property that is like a bunker? We did have a tornado. It was classified by FEMA this past summer when it rolled through, when it touched down in Queens and Brooklyn. It also hit Staten Island, but for some reason Staten Island wasn't declared actually is experiencing a tornado, as per the news reports. So if you do have that knowledge, the New York metropolitan area is a big place. A lot of people listen to the show. Thank God, things have been moving quite nicely for the show. Is there a protocol? So if you could do me a favor, go on the comments page and help me out with that. And another, Pennsylvania got crushed with flooding. I saw some of that flooding. I experienced that. I worked a couple of years ago, I think it was about 4 years ago in the springtime, with the Delaware, overflowing and cresting. And just after the rain stopped, it's pretty amazing about when the water is still coming in, into the river, and they have these major, release valves. That was quite interesting, I'll tell you that. I did some good work, I thought. I thought I put people in the right direction, because on a whole, you know, the government can't handle all these people. So, you know, the insurance industry recommends guys like myself. And there's a lot of guys out there just like me, do a great job. Then we had 50, 60 mile-an-hour winds here in the New York, New Jersey area, knocked down some trees. We did have one fatality. Unfortunately, a gentleman up there in West Milford off of 23, 9:30 in the morning, tree came down and, impacted the car. And unfortunately, the person driving was killed. Just for me, my condolences out to the family. I've experienced something like that. Everybody knows Kevin, Big Kevin from Premier Drying Solutions, one of my guests about six or seven shows ago. He's an expert in water damage in our field and across the country. He's on some councils and some large loss teams, and he goes around taking a look at lending his expertise. He had an employee, the kid I knew him, a young kid, 22 years old, stormy night, and a tree fell on him just like that. Fell on him and put him in a coma, and he never came out of it. That was on the island. The island also experienced this past week an earthquake. That was about 55 miles off the coast. It happened at they registered at 10:46 a.m. I've seen my natural disasters, and you know, being away from your family, it's kind of difficult. After a while, the wife gives you sideways looks when you're saying you're going to go away for another couple of weeks. So I've cut back on that. Depends on the situation, if it's dire yet. This kind of leads me into where we're going to be going the next couple of weeks, because we're going to be talking about more preparedness and actually the physical part of it, as in, you know, the kits. Met a real cool guy, real fascinating guy, this guy in Paul Faust. He's from 1-800-PREPARE. He'll be coming on the show next couple of weeks, and he and I and the producer of my show, Bill, we've been communicating on what's the best way to assist our fellow Americans or citizens and preparing them for having their kits. And, you know, the Northeast, we've had blackouts a couple of years ago. It was August 14th. That was a crazy one. We did get our first classified tornado, at least in my recent memory. Obviously, there's fires and floods and winter storms. And lightning storms and snow and ice and all the rest of that stuff that happens here in the Northeast. It's a constant pounding of being prepared. Preparedness also doesn't have to be survival kits and you know, you need to have X amount of gallons of water per day. You know, there's also the financial end of it, of having your paperwork in order. God forbid someone does die in your family. You know, well, Will, that's part of a disaster. You know, financial papers, bank accounts, and phone numbers. And again, those are all those things we always try to stress here about, and, you know, medication, about having those simple things that you take for granted on a daily basis. It's not a doom and gloom program. What we're trying to do here is we're just trying to give you ideas and some tools and how to offset or mitigate a disaster when it does happen, an emergencies happen in your life. I'm thinking about the cold weather. I'm thinking about Danny right away. I'm thinking about, you know, generators. This past week with that with the heavy storms that came, with the wind that came in, you know, many neighborhoods got knocked out again. I get these email updates on parts of the counties that are affected, and you know, without power. People are still without power. This is now a couple days later, you know. So I think about that. I also think about, on a business standpoint, I've had some issues with my computer. I had to stay on the line for about an hour and change regarding information that was lost. You know, I do have a backup system where everything gets, you know what, backed up. So, you know, you have your little USB little card that you plug in there so you can take it. It's kind of mobile. You know, we're going to have an IT disaster recovery guy in the next, I think next month he's going to be on. These are all, again, they're all relative, all about being prepared, because whether it's natural or a terrorist threat. And again, this past week we had Portland, the guy, homegrown Somali, I think it was. And then he's in this country, and he planned on blowing up something, but, thank God, our law enforcement, locals and federals, that were able to put a kibosh to that. I mean, these things are, you know, natural and unfortunately now we're in the world, you know, with 9/11, we're in this post 9/11 terrorist thing. And before we had 9/11, we had 93 bombing of the Oklahoma City bombing, about, you know, being on the lookout. You know, what's suspicious, what's not suspicious, but, you know, being aware of your surroundings. I'm a big advocate of that. I tell my wife when she goes out to the mall at nighttime, I'm like, just when you're going back with your bags to the car, just take a look around, you know, just a little look. So, again, this is, I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, Disaster Recovery Hour. We're going to go to a break.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Saturday between 7 and 8 a.m. That's a.m. as in the morning. And that is 970, The Apple, the talk of New York. So in the last couple of months, we focused on property, and then just about, I guess this past month, we started going into another direction, because with the social media, with the Twitter, and if you can follow us on Twitter, we've been contacted by other people relative to property damage, but more in an international disaster. We were talking about Haiti for a couple of weeks. And then we had another turn, which was a very positive turn, Got a lot of traction with that one. That was with diabetes with Dr. Archie Roberts. He's the cardiologist and associated with the NFL and the NFL Player Association with the expansion of the diabetes and cardiovascular disease. It's like I said, the disasters come in many colors, which leads me into my guest today. His name is Larry Manis. I've known Larry for a little while. Larry is a owner of United Auctions and United Trading. Larry, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the invitation.
My pleasure. When we talked about disasters, a lot of people have fires and floods, and even apartment stores have fires and floods. And I know people with the economic downturn are always looking for good buys and such. And I always thought your industry, not a lot of people know about the principles of the recovery of what happens with all this stuff. Why don't you give me a background of getting into this industry, the recovery part of items, clothing, apparel, things of that nature, and even other items. Why don't you give me some background and we get the people all hot and bothered with that.
Sure. Our company is United Trading. I'm the sales director for that company, and it's also affiliated with United Auction and blinglights.com, which is the automotive division of the company. In addition to the insurance, the disaster claims, that particular recovery, that is a big part of what we do. But we also handle liquidations of all types of wholesale consumer products. This would be the product that originates from mail order companies, retail chains. This also would include product that we get from public storage facilities. Product from there, a significant amount of it that comes from storage charges that have not been paid, especially in these economic conditions,
right.
And also from freight and insurance claims that are affiliated with these storage facilities.
Why don't you give me some of the things that people can sink their teeth into regarding retail stores and how they is there a place we look online at your space? Do you guys actually hold the auctions also, or is that just on the retail side?
We actually service the wholesale customers, the retail the retail stores, the wholesalers, the exporters. We don't sell to the public.
Okay.
Because we have to deal in most cases with very extensive quantities, anywhere from one trailer to 150 trailers if it came in by ship, from another country.
No.
And there was salt water damage, for example, or smoke damage, or a variety of other issues that could affect the inventory.
Now, does the government get involved with the do's and don'ts of these products coming in and making sure that as a responsible company you're doing the right thing by the public?
Great question. Government is always involved when there is environmental issues. If goods are imported, and for example, if the lead content is not certified and controlled by the manufacturers overseas coming into the U.S., there is a tremendous amount of strict sanctions that have been applied by the U.S. government for anything that affects children, whether it's clothing or toys,
mm-hmm.
anything that they come in contact. That's one issue.
So with the compliance issues there, now is it the foreign government and their product coming in? Say, let's just use the port down here in Newark. They have a couple of containers coming in. There's, I guess, manifest papers, and it's dictating the content. Like in our field, like when I do a smoke job or a fire job, I provide MSDS sheets, material safety data sheets, with the makeup of all the cleaning chemicals that are inside. Is it a residential? Is it a commercial space? Can it be used in a hospital? So does it actually have the same type of paperwork when let's just say, a container of widgets come in and make sure it's safe?
If it's children related,
right,
there has to be manufacturer certification that the product either is lead free or has a minimal amount of lead in it according to the levels prescribed by the Department of Environmental Protection. And many times when a manufacturer goes out of business, the paper trail could disappear. Mm-hmm. And there is ways of testing this particular product when it gets here to make sure that it does comply. And even when you have the paperwork, I'm sure that they do spot check a lot of this product customs to make sure that it does comply.
So when if something does come in and they do the spot check, so it's a third party administrator would take, like there's an outside agency, not from the EPA, but somebody else that would do the testing. And then does that stuff stay in hold? And it kind of reminds me of that the computers we have waiting down there in the docks in Haiti. But that's another story. So with this third party administrator, they're doing the testing. Is there a downtime while you wait for that product to be cleared?
We don't usually get involved with that particular process. We're only involved when the goods are actually released.
Oh, okay.
I see the sanction from the other end. Retailers today are very fearful of touching anything without the proper documentation, because if the product is found in the retailer's premises and they're selling it and it cannot be documented that it is lead-free or has minimal lead as prescribed, the sanctions to that retail store are very high.
You know, sometimes you, especially then this is the holiday seasons, you'll hear about, you know, whatever our local news stations might do, a little story on something that got high lead content. Now, is that percentage-wise of just getting through the chain that enters in the states, or do you give an example about that?
I have not had firsthand experience on how the government enforces it, but I'm sure the retailers, based on the communications they've had with me, do get visits from government agencies that check for this, want to see the documentation. And to protect themselves, I'm very familiar with a lot of retailers that actually either buy or rent the testing equipment so they can feel more protected that if there's any problems, they know for a fact mm-hmm. that it is, you know, it complies with regulation.
Yeah. So there's good accountability for that then along those lines.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chris, I'd like to also add that when we sell our inventory to our regular accounts, or the accounts that may come into our warehouse facility in Saddlebrook or California or our showroom in Chicago, these buyers, especially the sophisticated buyers that are buying for larger operations, if it's children related, if they don't have the certification, they in most cases will not buy it, or they want to have it tested before they actually take it in.
You know, one of the things I run into, and especially in New York City, because there's a lot of wealth in our neighborhood, whether it's Jersey or New York or the island of Westchester, but some of the homes that have these major fires or even apartment buildings, the personal property is expensive. Some of it is scheduled with the insurance carriers, meaning it's got separate policy riders on it. How, you know, and some of these people always talk about, you know, how can I track it? Because, you know, maybe I want to rebuy my stuff, and even though they've been reimbursed, when I contact somebody from the insurance carrier, says, listen, call ABC company about retrieving these products, because then they're going to be giving money to replace it.
Chris, I think what you're referring to is a procedure that would apply to a individual, whether he's for his home insurance. Mm-hmm. Or a commercial insurance claim. And the procedure that I believe you're referring to is when an adjuster comes in. And in many cases, not all the property or inventory may have been completely damaged. So what the adjuster would do in order to mitigate damages would say, you know, we have these particular findings and mm-hmm. Would you be willing to pay so much, or what would you be willing to pay for this, and where they could basically sell it back? I think in many cases, the adjusters actually prefer to sell the product back to the homeowner or the owner of the commercial inventory. I've seen this in many cases.
Oh, really? Really? And you know what? After 20 years, it always seems like, you know where it went? And I say, I really can't give that information even if I had it. So we're going to go to a break. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guest today is Larry Mattis. He's from United Trading and United Auction. Okay, we're going to go to a break. It pays the bills. I say that every week, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. My guest today is Larry Manis. Larry does large-scale disaster auctions and liquidations. And again, I thought it was a very relative topic because I deal with a lot of personal lines. I have some large clients who handle nothing but commercial, right? Commercial losses, if you will. And also, especially in New York City, there's buildings that are managed by, I can name a dozen, but I'm not going to. I don't think I'm allowed to. But some of they rent space to retailers down below, and fires that happen on the 30th floor and the water damage that comes down. You've seen it 1,000 times before. A lot of guys, even though they're in the retail business and they have lots of inventory and do millions of dollars a year, don't have a clue what happens when they do have a disaster. Why don't you give an example of a disaster and how do you, if you spoon feed them, you hold their hand through the whole process, so maybe some of my listeners would get a grasp of that.
Well, we don't get involved with the actual claim. Our function comes in on the recovery aspect of the inventory after the claim is remediated with the insurance company. The most common advice is, of course, get yourself an insurance adjuster who could, direct you on what to do.
Public adjuster, because an independent adjuster is hired by the insurance company, so PA.
You have to be able to respond to everything that the insurance company is going to look at and all the professionals that they're going to use, including engineers, depending on the type of claim that you have. And if you're more astute and experienced with insurance claims, well, then you could perhaps bypass the adjuster and go right to the engineers or the professionals, the remediation people, that would give you all the information you would need in making sure that you are not getting shortchanged in your claim.
And how about part of the inventory? What happens with the rest of it? Does it stay? Do you have to deal with that also?
We deal with that, and this is the part of insurance salvage which gets really gets you the lion's share of the recovery. For example, you have a fire in a portion of the warehouse, and only part of it is fire damaged, and then another percentage may get smoke damaged. Well, when a person has an inventory, especially if that inventory is a whole line of product that's offered on a wholesale basis, you just can't say, okay, we're going to trash the percentage that was damaged. What do we do with the rest of the goods? Now we have an unbalanced inventory. We may not have all the colors and all the SKU styles and all the sizes.
Right.
So many, many times, if not, I would say this is probably the rule rather than the exception, when we get these inventories, we know that only from the adjusters who are dealing with these particular claims, we're advised that only a portion of this, and we verify this because we also, aside from freight, services. We offer inspection services in evaluating the valuation of recoveries.
Oh, right.
And if we know that only a small percentage is damaged, then the buyer will definitely be willing to pay more, knowing that most of that inventory is very merchantable and salable.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's similar to when we have a house fire or flood. And it's, again, smaller scales because it's on the personal lines, but I'll be asked by the adjusters or the public adjusters, the independent adjusters, what are my thoughts? I've been doing it a long time, so I'm generally in the ballpark of what's salvageable and what's not salvageable. Is it the same thing for – now, how does that happen with food? Because I know people you have a fire and the building that's attached to it, and I've actually had it at I don't know, where was it? Well, again, I can't say the name of the food store in the city that was attached to a building that had a fire, but they had very small smoke damage, very minimal smoke damage. Is there an EPA or a DEP formula or some kind of sanctions that if there's just a little smoke damage in a food store, that everything doesn't need to be gets rid of?
If the goods are sealed and they're not beyond expiration, and they haven't been affected by heat, anything noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke damage is usually not something that I think would prevent a product from going to the retailer, as far as I know.
So with that said, do you deal with the food products?
Yes. Most of the food products that we get are from supermarket chains, and they're called inventory resets or shelf pulls when they want to refresh all the inventories in the store. So it's actually not an insurance claim. There is times when we do get foods on there, and we have to inspect them as we inspect everything to make sure that we never put the consumer in any type of jeopardy.
Right, right. Because you're selling it, you'll be selling it to another store, and to make sure it's still a viable product, right? Doesn't mean it's not contaminated just because you're selling it to another store. They have no idea where the inventory came from.
Whether it's going to a wholesaler or exporter or another store, we presume on anything that we inspect, it's going to end up with a retailer. And we always have to keep that in mind when we do our inspections.
You know, a friend of mine who's in a prosecutor's office out here was asking me if I had gotten a spike in claims and fire damages this past year because of the mortgage issues and, you know, people bailing out on their mortgages and having arson and so on and so forth. Now, in your business, did you see a spike in liquidations and people, companies going under, and now you're having all this inventory in the street, or was it that they weren't producing as much inventory so there wasn't as many liquidations?
I haven't thought about that, but it certainly would seem logical that there could be more, insurance claims under those circumstances. But I don't particularly see that. We do notice that when there's bad weather in a particular state, a storm or a hurricane, mm-hmm. There tends to be a lot of inventory that's been affected by that situation.
So now products that are made in the States for disaster purposes, products that are made in the States, products that are made from the outside of the States, and they come in, they're a big chain store has it. Is there a different set of rules on the resale if it's not really affected directly? Or it's kind of balled into one thing, and then, so there's a wholesaler involved there. Is there a difference with that?
If a discounter is selling something, for example, that may have noticeable smoke damage, we disclose everything. Mm-hmm. And we encourage our customers to disclose everything.
Oh, okay.
And we find that that's usually the case. I mean, if a customer is getting something for less than half of its regular cost, and it's represented as merchantable, but it may have a slight odor to it, mm-hmm. that's usually represented. And people, I don't think people are distracted from that. I think that's they're willing to accept that to get a much better price for usable inventory.
Right, right. So, nowadays everybody's worried about getting the wool pulled over their eyes because of the economic downturn, and which is now 3 years in the making. I'm not an economist, but that's what it seems to be for me. So there is checks and balances. I mean, you're doing the right thing because it's paper driven, correct?
I'm sorry, excuse me.
It's paper driven. So I mean, you need to take, when you look at inventory, you're going to say, okay, you're signing off on this that it's sellable merchandise. So there is a paper trail to say, authentic, or not what I think, but an expert signed off on it.
Well, let's say, for example, we're brought to a warehouse and we're told that this is what's supposed to be here. Unfortunately, many times an adjuster may come into a warehouse, and not everybody can be an expert in everything.
Right.
And may not be familiar with apparel as opposed to footwear, and may not know the latest fashions. Well, when we go in there, if we don't feel that we are capable or have the knowledge to properly inspect, we bring the right people in with us to evaluate it. We substantiate our inspections not only with a detailed written report, but with many, many pictures. Mm. And we have to – disclosure is very important, because many of our customers, they take our word for it. They look at our report. We describe to them what we found there. We describe to them what was told to us. By the way, not all the time do the adjusters' reports are in sync with ours.
Right,
We look at things as in the respect that it has to be resold again, and there has to be recovery on it. The adjuster's looking at it more from a damage issue.
Right.
And may not be, you know, looking at it from the perspective that we have to see it from.
Let's go to the break, and then we'll finish up with Larry after the break. Pay some bills, like I said, every time we go to a break. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Saturday morning between 7 and 8 a.m. on AM 970, The Apple, of Talk of New York. Today, my guest is Larry Manis. I know you've been listening for United Auctions and United Trading. Larry does a salvaging on products, and the products are vast. They can be electronics, they can be food, they can be retail goods, children's apparel, children's toys, things of like along those lines. Larry, what are some of the things that that people don't notice? You know, give an example of a disaster that actually looked minimal at the beginning, like electronics. Look at the beginning of it. It's like, a little water, but let's say the building had no power. So it's August, humidity levels, things like that. You've experienced those, I'm sure.
Yes, Chris. One particular situation comes in mind. You could have a water issue, a flood, or a drain pipe that backs up, and a very minimal amount of the product appears to have gotten wet. Well, when you're dealing with items that are electronic or metal, there's secondary consequences. There's corrosion that could take place on this product. And when you have an insurance claim on this product, the manufacturer is not, especially if they find out, they're not going to no longer warranty or guarantee that product anymore.
Right.
You know, that product has been affected, and if they find out, the warranty is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's overlooked in many, many claims. We see that when we do inspections where something got flooded and it was something that could have these secondary claim issues. And your insurance company won't be there for you after that happens. So you have to pay close attention to how the water is affected, how the humidity at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If this claim took place, let's say, during the summer,
mm-hmm.
Chances are, like you just mentioned, there wouldn't be any air conditioning or ventilation, and the humidity could have a very negative effect on this inventory. I'm always concerned about the warranty of a product once we get it, because warranty on especially electronic items is very important. What do you do after you, if a business owner takes this product and he ships it out of state to the West Coast from the East Coast, then you have to take it back. There's all types of additional costs that you run into because you can't test every piece. But when you have a water claim on certain product, especially electronics or medical, let's say, syringes medical testing equipment, you have to be very conscious of that. And if you don't feel that you're qualified to make this, or you don't feel you're getting the cooperation of the insurance adjuster, you got to bring in the right people because they'll bring in the people to disprove your claim.
Right. So when people want to reach out for you guys, what are the contact infos?
Well, we're at 82 Midland Avenue. That's our local address in Saddlebrook. We're right off of 46.
Jersey.
In New Jersey. Any of your listeners in Bergen County are welcome to call and ask for me at 973-253-9100. That's 973-253-9100. And if I can help any of your listeners, it's our pleasure. We have a warehouse facility there, and usually this time of year, there's a lot of people looking for opportunity buys on surplus or excess inventory, and we're more than happy to accommodate them as long as it's not for retail purposes, because as I said, everything we do is on a wholesale level.
So, but this is not for Harry homeowner. This is for the business owner or who's buying large bulk, and obviously they're good prices because it's on a different price scale. Larry's banner is on my website, so you can click on that and you get all the contact information from there. Larry, I thought like disasters, and I run into it a fair amount of times, but you know what? I didn't realize it was on this grand scale. You know, so there's a whole other section of after the claim is settled that I don't think business owners know about it. So it should be part of their continuity planning, which we talk about all the time. Just doing the old neighborhoods and the righteous thing by your fellow American, but on a business standpoint, because it's important. Yeah, I mean, some of these guys are getting taken advantage of, and they're not bringing in the right people. So I appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks a lot. Take care. So it's that time of year. We get the bad weather. We talked about at the beginning of the show. We were talking about the crazy weather that hit the East Coast and rolled all the way up. I shouldn't say hit the East Coast, but it rolled up from the southern states all the way up into our neck of the woods, the Jersey, New York area, with those crazy heavy winds. I was actually at my house during the day, which I'm rarely ever there, but I had to push some paper and I was doing some things before I got back to the office. And I just saw my trees, and I remember we were talking about, you know, being prepared for storms, trimming your trees, do your gutters, for ice damming. And because I remember I was telling you that if you don't maintain your gutter system at your house, and you have pooling of water and that water pools and it starts coming up underneath the ground through your slab of your basement, that is what we call seepage, and that is not a covered loss. So being prepared along those lines, it's the winter months. Again, it's going to be predicting a bad winter. Whether it's not bad or not, we're still going to have a cold spell of some sort. We're still going to have some form of accumulation with snow. And just upstate New York on I-90, I think it was, tractor trailer. Got jackknifed and shut down both sides of the highway. And people were stranded for some like 36 hours. It was nuts. And I remember last summer you had in China where the people were down there for 10 days or 2 weeks, whatever. They were trapped on a highway. They couldn't go anywhere. So the same thing, I'm telling you, see, about this whole thing, with the communication, this whole, everything is just, the world is flat and small. Everybody knows everything that's happening from one country to the other. It doesn't matter what the distance are. So anyway, these people are trapped in their car, and I can guarantee you they didn't have a kit. Now, we've been talking about it, make a kit. We're going to be rolling out a kit in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be talking about the kit next week. The different types of kits. There's the car kit. There's the house kit. There is even at the office. Let me tell you, New York City. There's a fire, a flood in a building, and you know what? Or you could have a gas leak. You could have odors from restaurants leaking. Seeping up into the off-gassing into buildings with the apartments above, having a mask and a little 95 paper mask, something. So these people are in the car, getting back to those people, stranded. Now we're going to be talking about next week. Like I said, we're going to have different types of kits. There's a kit for the car. So, having a kit for the car, huge. Just huge. We actually, my wife, and also my car. I got all types of equipment in my car. I got a rubber suit. I got a Tyvek suit. I got respirators. I got a Scott pack. I got rubber gloves in case it's a hazardous materials. I mean, I got everything in my car. I got a fire extinguisher. I also a first aid kit. So I'm pretty much got like the Mona Lisa of kits in my car. It's my whole trunk is stuff full of stuff, stuffed with stuff, excuse me. Of course, my wife has a kit. We have a first aid kit, which encompasses some other things too, besides Band-Aids, and the kids play sports. You know, it's going to happen, soccer, football. Again, it goes back to that prepared thing. Now, who would have thunked it? And I said thunked it, not plunk it, is with these people stranded in the car. Okay, so you have no food. You have no water. It was below freezing, obviously, because it was snowing. But these people up there in upstate New York, you got to have something. You have to. This, you're coming home from work. You had a hard day's work. You're in a snowstorm. You're driving home. Boom, you're in traffic. Okay, an hour. You give your wife a call. You give whoever your call. You're stuck for a little bit. Not 36 hours, though. Okay, not 36 hours. And the Red Cross isn't coming to your help. I mean, they can't get anywhere because they're in traffic, too. They're 10 miles behind you. So hear these warnings. You just get something. You know, be that guy. You know, that guy who's always got, be the MacGyver guy. Everybody likes the MacGyver guy. Again, have something. Just have something in the car that could get you by. You never know. So with that said, that's going to be that's going to be the premise for next week's show and the following week after that. Making kits. I'm going to tell you what you need for your kit. With that said, another good show. God bless our country. Let's bring home the troops. We've been there too long, in my opinion. And we'll talk next week. Again, tune in. It's going to be a dynamite show. Very day-to-day kind of stuff that you need. All right. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.